the National Park Service turns 100 this year.
And it is a moment of celebration. The service maintains everything from Yosemite Valley to the battlefield at Gettysburg.
This is also a moment of challenge. The parks are popular, which means they are crowded.
They take money to keep up, and deferred maintenance has run into the billions of dollars.
So this week we're examining the Park Service at 100. NPR's Nathan Rott starts by asking how we pay for the parks.
You've heard it. I've heard it. The national parks are America's best idea. And driving through the gold-brown savanna of Joshua Tree National Park, past its Dr. Seuss-like trees and wind-carved rocks, it's hard to argue.
Gosh, it's pretty.
Yeah, and this low-angle light is my favorite out here.
But the national parks are also another thing, which is what Jason Thoyer is here to show us. Thoyer is in charge of cultural resources here at Joshua Tree, which means he doesn't deal as much with the trees or the rocks, but the historic buildings.
Are we gonna be able to go in here? Come on.
Like this old schoolhouse at a place called Keys Ranch.
And this is something that we call vernacular architecture, which is they sort of made do with what they had.
I'm laughing because the building looks like it could go down with a good sneeze. There's more light pouring in through the cracks in the warped wooden plank walls than there is through the windows.
You know, so we came in and added all of these supports here.
Thoyer points to a beefy wooden frame built up against the walls.
How much does it cost to keep a building like this standing every year?
Ballpark, looking at this, 35, 40 grand. Pretty quickly, too. That money can go pretty quick.
Between hiring contractors and historic preservationists and the like. Granted, Thoyer says costs change every year depending on what needs done and what's been done. But still, that's 40 grand for just one building here at Keys Ranch. Never mind the house up the hill, the guest house, the work shed,
the tractors, the wagons over here,
the windmill, or the historical oddity that is the outhouse.
We have had our historic structure people from the region say they have never before seen a two-seater.
Really?
Yeah, that's side by side.
Just when you can't stand to be alone.
Exactly. You want to have a little company.
Potty humor aside, the point is there are a lot of buildings here that the Park Service is tasked with protecting and maintaining. And it costs a lot of money to do that. How much money exactly? Thoyer says it doesn't really matter.
Because that much money doesn't exist in the National Park Service.
Joshua Tree National Park, like most of our national parks, is a great idea. It's beautiful beyond words. Its structures and sites tell the history of the West. But Joshua Tree National Park is also expensive to maintain.
Here at Joshua Tree, we've got $60 million in backlog maintenance.
David Smith is the superintendent here at Joshua Tree.
And to put that in perspective, our annual operating budget for this park is just a little bit over $6 million.
Which means that $60 million backlog of potholed roads and flood-damaged trails, crumbling campgrounds and leaking pipes, isn't getting any smaller. Nor are there more rangers, janitors, or emergency rescuers to deal with the record crowds.
To be honest, we don't have enough money to provide the level of service the public expects.
Joshua Tree, like most of the 409 areas managed by the National Park Service, gets the bulk of its money from Congress. It's appropriated year by year.
I like to say we're a perpetuity organization on an annual appropriation.
That's Jonathan Jarvis, the director of the National Park Service. That appropriated money, Jarvis says, usually comes to about $3 billion a year for the entire Park Service. Sounds like a lot, right? $3 billion? Well, it's not, at least not in terms of what's needed. Parks are expensive for a lot of the reasons you'd think. Visitor centers need displays, and millions of drivers means damaged roads. But there are also other costs you wouldn't automatically think about. Expensive ones, like the three sewage operations at Grand Canyon or the sprinkler system at Independence Hall. Jarvis says when you think of the park system as a whole,
it's like a city of 4 million, except the population turns over every couple days.
So when the money's tight, some jobs just don't get done, and those jobs start to pile up. Today, the total backlog of needed maintenance at our national parks is nearly $12 billion.
I need about twice as much money as I currently get to address my maintenance backlog.
But what are the odds of that actually happening? Jarvis is hopeful for his part. He points out that Congress did give more money to the Park Service this year for its centennial. Holly Fretwell, on the other hand, is not. She's a research fellow at the Property and Environment Research Center and an economics professor at Montana State University. And she's been studying this whole funding of the national parks and public lands for decades.
There's no way that Congress is going to appropriate enough funding to make up this total deferred maintenance backlog. That's not going to happen.
Congress just doesn't have $3 billion laying around, and the parks aren't that big of a priority. Which means, Fretwell says, people need to realize that the current traditional system of funding national parks is broken.
We have to do something different. There is no question, because we are losing the quality of our parks.
Now, Fretwell has some ideas on how to change the status quo, ideas I heard echoed from other people as well, like limiting the expansion of the Park Service in the future, the thought being that every new park or expansion thins out the money for the rest. Another?
One is just looking more seriously at public-private partnerships.
Agreements where the Park Service still owns the land and sets the rules, but a private company or entrepreneur runs the operations.
They are a firm. They are a business. They generate profits, and their goal is to manage for a good quality product just like a firm somewhere else would be.
Okay, I know what you're probably thinking. A private company running a national park?
It's going to turn into a Disneyland, or they're going to charge us, you know, $1,000 a day.
Fretwell says the Park Service would have the ability to set the rules and stop that from happening. But still, back at Joshua Tree, I ask the question to Jason Thoyer, our archaeologist from earlier. What does he think of the idea of privatizing parts of the National Park Service?
Well, you know, I mean, I think before that point, there is just something in terms of our own internal structure, adopting more of a business model into the way we function.
Right.
It's going to be very interesting to see, and I think over the next 10 years or so, we're going to know how it all works out and what it looks like.
Why 10 years?
We're getting fewer resources, and resources in backlog are only deteriorating in condition.
So in 10 years, the problem is only going to be a whole lot worse. Nathan Rott, NPR News.